Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungakar. On today's show, we'll find out how an ancient Peruvian culture was inspired by the heavens. For centuries, people have lived and worked in a part of coastal Peru spotted with oddly shaped hills. Most knew that the mounds were man-made, but not much else. That all changed with Robert Benfer, a professor emeritus in the MU Anthropology Department. With not much more than a sharp eye in Google Earth, Benfer discovered that these weren't just hills, they were animals. 4,000-year-old sculptures, to be exact, designed to be seen from the sky. And they weren't just for decoration, they were carefully aligned with the movements of the sun and stars. Benfer talked to KBIA's Scott Pham about his discovery.
So these were people who had no writing. What was the highest level of technology?
Well, they definitely were. They lived in the Stone Age. Metal was not developed for a long time. These early mounds are associated with a time when cotton was first domesticated, and that was the first industrial crop, and it was very important. And one might imagine that since string became very easy to make, it might have helped them to lay out their structures. All of their structures are characterized by extreme symmetry, except for these mounds that don't have even one straight line in them. And I think part of the reason people overlooked them is they were so odd. They just didn't fit into what we expected. We couldn't see them before. I mean, I've walked over some of these, but you have to see them from the air.
The photos that you included in your publications are mostly Google Map photos. Is that how you actually started your research?
That's how I found them. I was looking for something else. I was mostly examining temples, but I noticed these two long arms, which really are effigies, but I didn't know that then, that there was one of these circular ones, and I wondered if it formed an astronomical alignment. And I was looking at Google Earth, and I said, my gosh, this structure has teeth. And I had had that suspicion before, but I put it out of my mind because everyone knows there are no effigy mounds in Peru. But then I could see that it was. Perhaps the most compelling evidence of that condor is, with Google Earth, I drew a line from an offering chamber in a temple that's been excavated through the eye of the condor because it makes a straight line right through the length of the condor. And I extended it. Well, I just kept running and running the line, and I went 29 kilometers up the valley until, bang, I realized immediately what it impacted, and it was a condor stone. It's one of two pillars that has been carved into the shape of a condor head. And so then you look a little further, and you find that the orientation of these two sites, 29 kilometers apart, are identical. And a line that connects two of them is the June solstice sunrise.
Do you think you would have found these effigy mounds without Google Earth?
That's a very good question. Possibly. Without Google Earth, I would have had to buy images from commercial places. And I bought one, $425, one picture.
Just one picture?
One picture. And it's better than Google Earth. But obviously, I can't afford too many of those. It would have been much more difficult, and it would have been hard to get the money because no one wants to give you money to look for things that are well-known not to be there.
Do you think that happens a lot in science, that you become conditioned to look for one kind of thing, and then you miss something that's
Absolutely.
Been there all along?
Absolutely. Archaeology is, by definition, a discovery science. We can't do experiments the way that physicists do. One experiment suggests another. But the order that we find things does suggest, well, if there are these kinds of effigies in this valley, then there should be some in the next valley. We do an inductive-deductive approach, and it's not as powerful as an experimental approach, but it does help us. And it's the same with these astronomical alignments. Again, it's probably because I have a better eye for such things than most, but I found a suspicious-looking alignment, and we checked it out, and then we began to find a lot more.
So what does it mean to have astronomical orientations?
Well, if you look at a line on the map, some of them are pointed toward the rising solstice sun of December, and others are pointed toward the equinox, and others, the larger ones especially, are pointed towards the extreme that the Milky Way forms. These are the ways that people oriented themselves. There was no North Star then. Polaris wasn't even close to where it is now. The planet wobbles and it moves. So north-south didn't have very much salience to people there. But the equinox does, and the solstice do. They help define the seasons, and also they orient you in space. And the other thing that it's a little difficult to understand unless you're a physicist is that South Americans, people from the Andes, people from the tropical lowlands, do not conceive of time and space as unrelated but as the same thing, like modern physicists perceive it, like Einstein was first able to visualize.
What do you mean that they conceived of time and space
well,
as the same?
Well, they just conceived of it as one dimension, and in a way it is, of course. If you're going to look for the solstice sunrise over a marker on a hill, well, that's a particular place and it's a particular time and it's all one thing. We just imagine it to be different. Einstein says our imaginations are wrong. Their imaginations are correct.
When we talk about time and space this way, we're not just talking about physics and Einstein. We're talking about geography.
We use the generic term human geography. Sometimes we say cultural geography.
Larry Brown teaches geography at MU. He says that the tradition of aligning buildings with celestial bodies isn't just a feature of ancient society. It persists today.
Why is it that we need to have east-west, north-south grid patterns? That's the way we chart the movement of the sun and the moon.
So, if you're driving east down Broadway or I-70 here in Columbia, you're not just driving in the general direction of the rising sun. No, if you're driving east, you're facing the exact point where the sun rises on the spring equinox. That's what east is, an astronomical orientation.
And you think, well, people aren't self-consciously saying, let's lay that street out so that we we have a record of where the sun and the moon is. No, but it's a leftover. To imagine in a primal world, the sky was so dramatic. The night sky would have been filled with activity. And then it's gone. And here comes this huge ball of fire that crosses the sky. You're looking up at the sky and saying, those forces, maybe we ought to get in touch with those.
That was KBIA's Scott Pham speaking with Robert Benfer and Larry Brown. And that's it for this week's Under the Microscope. Thanks for listening. To hear this episode and others, just head to our website, kbia.org.